listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow.
This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
And hello and welcome to Empower the Spirit for Sunday, October 16th, 2011. This is Doug Kelly. So glad you could join me. And of course, I'm also here with Dr. Vicki Hunter. Welcome, Vicki. Is anybody out there?
Hello, sorry, I just had a little sound glitch.
Yeah.
Good evening.
Cool, so you are out there.
I'm here.
Cool.
Everybody's here.
If I'm here and you're there, wait.
We're doing good. Good evening,
right.
Doug.
Yeah,
nice to talk to you.
Yes, nice to have you here. And of course, this is our new one-hour format that we are doing. And tonight, let me tell you what's going to be coming up here in the next few minutes. We're going to be talking about Futility is Life and Exercise in Futility. And then near the bottom of the hour, Living Free with Reverend Camille Edwards. She'll talk about some tips and techniques for better living with a focus on herbology. And then Dr. Vicki is going to talk about ghosts and other dimensions. Are there multiple dimensions or levels of spirit life and other things like that? Now, if you would like to call in and ask a question, you can do that. The number is there on your screen, 714-459-3973. Reverend John Hightower will be screening your calls. You can also ask questions in the chat room. And so we welcome those who are listening to this live broadcast, and we also welcome those who are listening to the archives. Good to have you. Glad you are joining us. So let us therefore thus indeed get into our topic for tonight, the first one anyway. Is life an exercise in futility? Now, what are you laughing about?
Thus and therefore, and henceforth
thus,
shall go.
Therefore, thus indeed. We're going to talk about futility. Now, this is an interesting topic for many people. It's been an interesting topic for me for many years. Vicki and I have talked about it on occasion. And so, what is the deal with futility? You know, and to our listeners, you know, you may or may not have considered futility or whether life is futile or all that. You know, with these difficult economic times, I'm sure a lot more people have considered or thought perhaps that life can be futile. And that's what this show is about. You know, it's really a matter of an attitude. And so I want to share some of my thoughts on futility and whether life is truly futile or not. Sometimes we can think it is. And I will be very straightforward. Futility is something that I have battled for many, many years. And I've had to really dive into it and understand it and look at it from a number of different perspectives in order to really get a good grip on it and in order to understand it in the proper perspective. And so that's why I wanted to talk about it tonight. Depending on, you know, where you're at in life, you know, we all have our story. We've all had our troubles. We may have current troubles, adversity, and so forth of various types, whether they're, you know, I mean, it can be anything. It can be relationship issues. It can be health issues. It can be, you know, you lost someone close to you. Could even be a pet. We've all had these things happen to one degree or another. The interesting thing about futility, you know, when we really get serious here and take a serious look at it, at life, that is, we look, for example, at all the beauty there is in the world. One of those things of beauty is a baby. Baby is born. You know, wonderful things are about it. Has fresh skin, youthful vigor, strength, all the hopes and dreams of the future. And, you know, then the rest of the story, right? The baby grows to be an adult, hopefully enjoys a vibrant and fulfilling life. And this would be a great story if it stopped here, but as you well know, it doesn't. The baby, once the epitome of life, grows old and dies. And folks, we're all that baby, all of us. You know, it's a journey of 80 or so years, give or take a few. You know, we can do nothing about it. It just happens. And it's a cold, hard, and perhaps even morbid truth. We begin dying as soon as we're born in some ways. And so when you look at it in that perspective, you know, it can be easy to adopt an attitude of futility. You know, if all we do is just grow up, grow old, and die, then what's the point? And that's what I want to talk about tonight. You know, in my opinion, dying, at least it has been, for most of my life, dying is the greatest calamity that anyone can face. It's, you know, the sadness, the sorrow associated with losing a loved one, you know, it's the toughest thing. It's just, in my opinion, it's the most heinous thing, heinous affliction that human beings can see or have happen to them. And it's hard to take when somebody close to us dies, you know. I mean, you look at elderly people, and I do, and I look at them, and you know, you look at them, and not too many years ago, they were just a little kid. They were just a child. They had all that strength and energy, and you wish you could bottle it and sell it and take some yourself, you know, like a drug. And here they are, bent over, having a tough time, you know, and then it just goes down from there. So, let's look at futility in some different ways to see if we can get a grip on it and look at it in perhaps a positive way. Many people have, past and present really, have made attempts to avert or remove futility from their lives. There have been a lot of philosophers, many, many of them, too many to name, a few of them, William James, Soren Kierkegaard, Nietzsche, they all taught philosophy as a remedy to despair and futility. Others seek religion to find meaning in life and avert futility. Others seek other things. I mean, there's a lot of thrill seekers out there, too. Just anything to distract us from actually seeing that futility. And some folks, again, conclude that with death comes the ultimate futility. But this may not be correct thinking. It's sad to see good-hearted people in sorrow over the tragedies of life. And it doesn't really matter whether you're rich or poor, where you live, where you were born, where you grew up, any of that. We all come to that point, you know, that we, in fact, die if we're going to live long enough. So there's some things, some lessons to learn out of this thing. For one thing, people could get so caught up with getting things, acquiring things, doing things in an effort to distract themselves that they forgotten what one of the most important things, probably the most important thing in life, and that is people. People matter. Things don't matter so much. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, the old expressions, you know, the person with the most toys dies with the most toys wins. And it's good, you know, it's fine to have things, to do things. But we need to really focus on what really matters in our life. People. Think about the people in your life. You know, we really show honor to others by our efforts to lighten their loads to the extent we can, by our loving and tolerant nature, just by lightening that load. And when we lighten other people's loads, we lighten our own as well. So the word futility, what does it mean? Well, we all know what it means. It means to serve no useful purpose, uselessness, frivolousness. Now, let's apply that to our lives. Does that apply to our lives? Most likely not. And if it does, you got to rethink this. If you consider your life pointless, frivolous, useless, serving no useful purpose, one of two things is an issue here. Either you're wrong, You're not looking at everything in a proper perspective. Or if it is true, you can easily change that. That's not hard at all. But generally, we have responsibilities that we take care of in life. And if you think about it from that point of view, who would do those if we didn't? You may have children. You may have dependents. You may be taking care of elderly parents. If not for you, then how would those things get done? And if we do have children, then obviously we can't look at life as futile. How would they get along if not for our involvement? So hopefully we can answer that, yeah, our lives do serve a useful purpose. We take care of things that matter, people, that involve people. What about other responsibilities and pursuits? You may have heard me use the expression I picked up from Zig Ziglar, or no, it was Paul Harvey. It was Paul Harvey many years ago, leaving the woodpile higher than you found it. What are you doing to leave the woodpile higher than you found it? How are you offering yourself in the service of others to do that? Because when you do, it negates futility. There's a fellow, an author, and he's a medical doctor, Ron Smotherman. He once wrote, "At the foundation of every life is one central desire, to make a difference that you lived." And I think that's important to a lot of us, you know. I know it's important to me. You want to make a difference. And that's the beautiful thing about the metaphysical community that has honestly restored my hope and faith in humanity, is that so many people have a genuine, sincere desire to make a difference in their, to those within their sphere of influence. And that is just such an honorable thing. And it's a relevant point to negate futility. And here's a big part of that point. If we make a difference that we lived, then by definition, we negate futility. You know, futility only exists when we do nothing meaningful with our lives, when we have no meaningful purpose, when we only take from others. But when we give, when we do something meaningful, we negate futility. When we fulfill our purpose, when we find meaning in life, and we add to that woodpile, we're negating futility. And as I continued my exploration, my research into this whole thing of futility, I kind of came to the conclusion that an attitude of futility is futile. Because when we consider all the evidence, if we're making a difference, and if this is not it, this life, then life is not futile. What if we look at our lives now from the point of view that it's just one chapter in a longer book? Then what? A lot of folks, when they feel this sense of futility or this feeling of futility, they're just looking at this chapter. They're just looking at this life. Well, what about the life that goes on? And you know, there's just way too much compelling evidence to show that life does go on in a coherent fashion. You know, we've talked about that on previous shows, and a lot of people believe that anyway. It took me a long time to come to that conclusion because I needed some compelling evidence. Well, I found it, and we've talked about it before. Suffice it to say that life goes on. And this is just one chapter in that longer book. You know, so what matters most in our life here is, you know, not the mistakes we make. Mistakes are a good thing. They bring us that experience that helps us to grow as human beings. But what really matters is how we live our life overall. People will always make mistakes. And as long as we have an attitude of do no harm and to do right or to do good, then we are making a difference. You know, we're not causing other people pain. You know, life's hard enough. We need to ask ourselves, do I make life easier or more difficult for others in general? Am I predominantly a taker or a giver? If all we ever do is take from the woodpile, we eventually deplete it. We lose friends, spouses, partners, relationships, and then blame other people for abandoning us. We can't do that. We need to make a difference that we lived, and we need to make sure that what we're doing every day gets us to that point to make a positive difference. You know, I love this quote, and I've really patterned my life after it a lot. It's a quote by Abraham Lincoln, a man of strong character and true greatness. And he once made this statement, "Die when I may, I want it said of me by those who know me best that I always plucked a thistle and planted a flower when I thought a flower would grow." You know, to me, that just embodies leaving the woodpile higher than you found it. Looking at people and helping them, believing in people. You know, and I'll be the first to say that people can be frustrating. I think we'll all agree on that. You know, we're all different. We have our different points of view, our perspectives. We have different traits, behaviors, and we can all drive each other crazy at times. That's just the diversity of human existence. But when we really look at people, we see so many beautiful things, and we give people a chance, you know, just like Lincoln said, "I always plucked a thistle and planted a flower when I thought a flower would grow." You know, by doing that, we negate futility. And as I mentioned just a minute ago, believe it or not, we can always make a difference to somebody. A lot of folks who are thinking about suicide or killing themselves, "Well, I, you know, it's not worth it. It's too hard." Well, you know, I'm not gonna say life is not hard. Life can be very hard. But we have to look at the bigger picture, as I said earlier. This is a chapter in a bigger book. And we don't want to close this chapter too soon. We don't want to end this chapter before it's been completely written, do we? You know, my father always said, you know, every day that we have is like a page in a book. And what we write on that page is up to us. We can write something good. We can write something crappy. Why not write something good? And so think about today, the page for today. What did you do today that negated futility? What did you do today that made a positive difference to somebody? And it can be you too. I mean, some days we just got to go veg. We need to take some time to relax, to regenerate, to regroup. That's fine. You did a nice for yourself. That's fine. But we can't always do that. I mean, that's not the extent of it is what I'm trying to say. We have to think about what we're going to write on that page of our lives for today. You know, if we write good things on each one of those pages for each day, as we go through our life, this chapter that we're living will be well written. It will be meaningful. It will be purposeful. And that negates futility. Some people say, well, you know, it doesn't really matter that we've lived. And that's simply not true. You know, it does matter that we live, that we've lived. It matters that our ancestors have lived, right? Because if our ancestors had a really bad attitude or had this overwhelming sense of futility and committed suicide or whatever, we wouldn't be here. You know, it matters that we live. It matters to the human race. It matters to our children. You know, there's some pretty amazing people that have lived, that have made great contributions to the world because they lived. A few of them, Einstein, Thomas Edison, Abraham Lincoln, as I mentioned earlier. What about Florence Nightingale? She was a dedicated nurse and pioneer of sanitation and hygiene. Did it matter that she lived? Yes, it did. You know, there's so many people that have come up with cures or medications like penicillin and other things that have helped people live better lives. And life wasn't easy for them either. It's sometimes easy to look back at somebody and say, well, you know, they had everything. Well, they may not have. I mean, many of these famous artists, who was it, Van Gogh? You know, they died penniless. Their art was not worth anything when they were alive. So, if our lives are an open book, and each day the page is blank, by the end of the day, make sure that that page is full of beautiful things. You know, make the choice. Make the positive choice.
And I might add in here, Doug,
go ahead.
Beautiful movie I watch every Christmas. It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah, my it's that one.
It's exactly what you're talking about. What would the world be if I weren't here? You see,
mm-hmm.
And it's a good reminder, that movie. Of course, I love those old black and white movies anyway, and I've watched many of them. Scrooge is my favorite, and it just gives that paradigm, that whole other kind of view of what would it be. I think it might be relevant in here to make the distinction between futility and depression.
Mm-hmm.
If people are depressed, that's a different element altogether. It could be biochemical, it could be health, any number of things can be causing people to feel poorly. I think that level of futility that you're regarding is that, why bother? Why do I bother? If there's no good result, then why do I bother? You know, but maybe you're right, we're not looking at the results in a different way. If
mm-hmm.
I'm hearing you right, it's just
absolutely
to see it from a different point of view.
Well, you know, as I'm not sure I can pronounce his last name correctly, Pierre Teilhard de Chardin. He's a 20th century French philosopher, paleontologist, and Jesuit priest. What a combination! But he made the quote that everybody knows. You know, we're not human beings having a spiritual experience. We are spiritual beings having a human experience.
Oh, geez, I thought I made that up.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was my original quote.
You and a few other million people. What he was doing is just saying whatever we all suspect. And it becomes clear, you know, we are who we are. We do the best we can with the knowledge, the experience, the abilities that we have at the moment. You know, we make meaningful contributions to humanity in any one of numerous ways, small or large. And when we do this, we leave a lasting legacy as to our goodness and our kindness. And by doing this, we make our positive mark on the world. And when we do this, futility has no hold on us. You know, the people who are overwhelmed with futility are not actively pursuing their purpose. Because when you are actively pursuing your purpose and you're busy with it, you don't have time for futility. You don't think life is futile. And I'm glad you brought up depression, because if you do, you know, if you think, well, this is just BS and we're all going to die if we live long enough and why not just get it over with, you know, that could be depression. It could be discouragement. Make sure that you get help with that. And one of the best ways to help is to define your purpose and get busy with it. Get busy with achieving your purpose, fulfilling it. Because when you do that, it brings meaning to your life, and you're busy. And you're busy doing good things. So,
I think it's really important. About finding a value of your existence.
It is.
And it's just being able to do something in the course of a day that makes you feel valuable and not needed. It's not a matter of the neediness and the need to be needed. It's about true value, what comes from your heart. And I think the point, too, is, you know, and I've had this trouble, I don't necessarily see the result that I would want, you know, or that's not quite the response that I had wanted. So then I say, well, what's it about? But I just got to change my view to say, not be attached to that, to just know that there is value in whatever we contribute to a day. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, Doug, even for the moments that, ooh, you know, what's it all about and why do I bother? I'm just too darn curious not to hang in there for the day and keep writing on the script.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And curiosity can go a long way.
And you know, there will be those times in life when that sense of futility may be a little closer to our, you know, our conscious thoughts. You know, when we lose somebody in death, when we lose a pet in death, you know, that'll take us to a place you can't get a postcard from. And those are the times when we have to manage our thoughts. You know, manage your thoughts. Control what you're thinking. And so, hey, Camille, mute your mic, would you? Thanks. So let's sum up this whole thing about futility. You know, if you look at it, yeah, life, we could just conclude, yeah, we're all going to die if we live long enough, so life is really, no, there's no point in it. We could say that. We could conclude that. But that's not positive. That's negative. That's depressing. You know, we're here. We're here for some reason. Let's figure out what it is. And if we look at life as a chapter in a longer book, then that puts a whole new light on it, doesn't it? It puts everything in a new perspective. So as long as we're here, let's make sure that we make a positive difference. Do no harm. Do right. Live your purpose. Find your meaning in life. Be busy with that, because that is going to bring you so much meaning and happiness. And do the best you can. Make a positive difference. Remember who depends on you. And I'm talking about children or elderly parents. They're depending on you too, but that's a good thing. You know, you're giving back to humanity. So those are my thoughts on it. And I hope they've helped for any of those of you who might be needing them. And
I think what it is, I'm sorry, Doug.
Go ahead.
I think what it is validation that other people feel the same way. And and that's why I think the importance of the discussion, that people are not alone with the feelings. And even the strongest, brightest, most intelligent, wonderful, extraordinary people have moments of feeling futility.
Oh,
have
yeah. And you know what? If you got that moment, if, you know, it's one of those times you've lost somebody or a pet or somebody, you know, if you're feeling that, fine. Give yourself 10 minutes. Feel it for all it's worth. Get it out of your system. Then really bring your thinking back and understand that, you know, and I don't know about you, but that's one thing that carries me. You know, I've lost people. I've lost pets.
It absolutely,
absolutely breaks my heart. You know how it feels. I'm no
yeah.
different than you. It crushes my heart. I lost my cat a few months ago. You know, he was 13 years old. And, you know, it just sends me to that place.
And you wonder, why do I have a cat? Why do I want to put myself through this?
Oh, yeah.
Why bother having a pet?
Yeah.
Why do I bother? That
absolutely.
Futility. Why would I want to do this to myself again?
Because.
But we do.
Because of the bright stuff, because of the positive stuff that those pets bring us, that those
absolutely.
Things bring us, that outweighs the sadness at the end. And who knows? You know, we don't know. Maybe we'll see him again. I don't know. I swear at times I thought my cat was here, but, you know, who knows? So I hope this has helped. And speaking of, you know, people who are having a tough time, and let's just take a moment, send out some positive energy, some positive thoughts. Please join me in this, because it does make a difference. And send them to yourself, too. Just imagine a white, healing, nurturing light surrounding your body, and then going out to humanity or going out to specific people that you care about. Take just a second to do that.
Even the ones that you don't like. Because they need it, too. Everybody needs it. Everyone needs a little love in their life and a little white light. Help them along. There's a wonderful little story I heard not too long ago about equals and opposites of light and darkness. And when you think of the seed of a tree that's under the ground, it's in the dark. But what does it do? It grows upward toward the light. Everything is reaching toward the light.
Excellent.
Good points, Doug.
Thanks.
Good points. And we're coming up to Camille's segment now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Go for
everybody
it.
Everybody sending white light.
Yeah.
All right. While you get her on the, is Camille on the line there, Doug? Are we
mm-hmm.
ready for her?
Mm-hmm.
Well, everyone, here is Living Free with Reverend Camille Edwards. Welcome, Camille.
Thank you, Vicki. Hello, and welcome to Living Free. Tonight we are continuing last week's discussion of simple remedies for cold and flu. I will answer any questions via email at a later time after tonight's show, so if you don't get everything I say, I'll be more than happy to post it for you. These are time-honored remedies passed down from generation to generation and now being scientifically proven to be effective. Echinacea is the big one. By the time you realize you have a cold or flu, Chances are it has run its course, or it will run its course. Echinacea is most effective at the very moment you realize you have been exposed to cold or flu. Herbalists prefer Echinacea gustifolia rather than Echinacea propaea, which is what is usually found in most stores. I once sat at a dinner table with three doctoral students who were writing their dissertations on Echinacea. The debate became very heated over who was more correct on how and when to take Echinacea. However, I am going to stick with what I learned from old school herbalists. It is recommended to immediately start taking Echinacea upon learning that you have been exposed. After 6 days of taking this, you stop on the seventh day and let your body rest. Echinacea works because your body is led to believe that it is under attack. So the body kicks up the immune system to attack the poison invader. After 6 or so days of this offensive front, your body realizes that it's really not under attack and begins to acclimate to the echinacea. So the herbalist recommends that on the seventh day you take a break and resume a day or two later until well. Echinacea will help reduce the time you may be sick. All herbalists recommend that you let the cold or flu run its course. Do not take medicine that will shut down the symptoms and not treat the cause, because all that does is cause the underlying environment to fester. When it comes back, it may come back in a worse manner, such as bronchitis or pneumonia. Synthetic antibiotics also cause this effect, plus they weaken your immune system and mess up the natural yeast in your stomach, causing other problems. When you let the cold or flu run its course, your body is able to effectively build its own immunity, making the body stronger for the next round of the flu or cold monster. I personally have not caught the flu or cold since 2009, knock on wood. When we had a recent scare of H1N1, swine flu, the Chinese resorted to a simple herbal remedy to effectively treat this illness rather than antibiotics based on over 1,000 years of effective treatment. It was the right thing to do. It was later discovered that the M2 protein of the virus was attaching itself to the lining of the lungs. The simple act of eating food and herbs stocked full of antioxidants is the most effective mode of treatment for treating this virus and other similar illnesses. The antioxidant, like the virus, carries an enzyme that adheres to the M2 protein of the virus, thus destroying it. Those herbs are easily available to us and very high in antioxidants are rosemary and oregano, to name two. Dark colored berries are also effective in fighting off this invader. Black elderberry is wonderful. Condense down the berries in a small saucepan. Keep it refrigerator. You can dilute it with water and drink as a hot tea or cold drink. I must admit that when we are not sick, we drizzle this on top of our vanilla ice cream. It is so good. The Chinese also use the blossoms of honeysuckle, and they are awful. This is only used when the infection is in full swing and you are very sick. Now, here are some foods. Small red beans, wild blueberries, red kidney beans, pinto beans, blueberries, cranberries, artichoke hearts, blackberry, prune, raspberry, strawberry, apples, pecans if they're raw, sweet cherries, black plums, russet potatoes, black beans, and then it says plum, which I guess would be the red plum. Typical spices that are high in antioxidants are clove, cinnamon, oregano, turmeric, cumin, parsley, basil, curry powder, mustard seed, ginger, cayenne pepper, chili powder, paprika, garlic, coriander, onion, and cardamom. Typical herbs are sage, thyme, margarine, tarragon, peppermint, oregano, basil, and dill weed. Next week, we will address stomach problems and simple herbal remedies. This has been Living Free with Camille Edwards. Live well, live free. Good night, everyone. Tune in next week for another interesting topic on Living Free with Camille Edwards. MCHS does not intend to prescribe, recommend, or otherwise treat illnesses or afflictions. If you're ill, please see your medical practitioner for a diagnosis and any medicinal prescriptions, doses, or treatments. It's been reported that some herbs may interfere with surgery. If you're currently on any medication or herbal products, please advise your doctor or dentist at first point of contact. Welcome back, everyone. Just reminding everyone as we go into the second segment that you can phone in. The number is on the top of the screen, 714-459-3973. And you can make comments or questions in the chat room. That's why we're all here and all available. Welcome to Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective in this second of our new one-hour format. And Doug, I think this is working great. And, you know, that was a great first segment on futility. And of course, thanks to Camille. We're just commenting in the chat room that I'm turned into a cayenne pepper freak. I think Lewis is saying he has too. So it takes a little bite, puts a little bite in things, and the dogs aren't quite happy with me anymore. I got to tell you that.
I'm not going to touch that one.
Well, they used to enjoy my leftovers, and it's not working so good anymore.
But
You know, Doug, I got to say with the futility, it's no question that I, from time to time, have my moments, but I am never alone in my reality. I have to do is, like, tune in, and I got little people, and I got spirits, and all kinds of folks to keep me company. And maybe that, I have to say, maybe that's why I can, you know, spend so much time alone, and I actually like that because I can have conversations in my head, which is kind of what we all wanted to talk about tonight.
Yeah, I talk to myself too.
Do you answer yourself?
And interrupt myself. And then I say,
well,
huh?
Huh? Yep. I had the strangest experience I want to share with you. I was at Walmart the other day. This is a first for me. I love firsts. I love it when it's the first time it's happened. Going through Walmart, picking up a few things, and I turned around and I bumped right into a spirit in the middle of Walmart. Now, who'd have thunk? And I went, whoa, sorry. And, of course, I look around and nobody is there. And it's just that feeling of energy, like I'm walking through this dense feeling. And I thought, geez, they're in Walmart. I don't know why that never connected in my brain.
Got Walmart, too.
But it was kind of funny. I thought, and of course, here I am chuckling to myself, and I suddenly felt like the ghost whisperer, you know, standing in the middle of Walmart. But, you know, I've wondered about this often. We talk a lot about the spirit world or other dimensions and grounded spirits, you know, not grounded spirits, residual energies, and so on. And we haven't really gotten into on our programs about all the other, I think it's Mark. Mark would talk about in Ireland there about the elementals that, you know, Mark L. Cowden. And in my world, it's quite common. And, you know, Native American philosophies and culture, lots of cultures all over the planet also talk about those other little realms, those other worlds of little people and giants and fairies and stuff. So, you know, when Harry Potter first came out, of course, I was really trying not to, you know, get into the Harry Potter craze. But, geez, one day I picked up the book and started reading, and I got so excited. I said, oh, my God, somebody who gets my world. I am such a Harry Potter nut. And anything that's kind of that. I'm now waiting for the next Aragorn book. I love that. They're fun worlds. They're magical worlds. And we encourage children
to actually like believe in the fairy world, believe in, you know, Disney's little characters and so on. And then we suddenly get older and think that that doesn't exist, that it's imagination. But in my reality, not imagination. It really is there. I don't think it's frequent with a lot of people, and maybe it's because people aren't tuned into that. So it's kind of hard to know if folks are really thinking about it. So that's another reason to bring it up on the show tonight and say, hey, you know, maybe there's something else. So I can see already a few people commenting in the chat, and that I think we're on to something here. I think we're on, Doug.
Well, a lot of folks believe in, you know, in elementals of different types, especially, of course, in Britain,
of course.
Yeah.
I think that's, there's such a history there. But let's be clear, the history is a written history. It's the shared history. It goes into books and stories and fables and myths and so on. But it goes way back. Like, it goes way back, Doug, way back. The, you know, if you think about the gods and the godettes, I call them, you know, and the goddesses and all the different realms of other worlds. Now, I'm not sure, and I honestly haven't spent a great deal of time thinking about it, except to accept that there are worlds within worlds, which would explain, I have friends living up in the mountains, and the theory is that Sasquatch just walk into a tree into another world. You know, it's another dimension.
Mm-hmm.
That they don't actually live here, so you'd be kind of hard-pressed to find one. But I know people who claim, and I have no reason to disbelieve it, that they've seen them, kind of hung. I don't know how much you'd hang out with the Sasquatch, but,
appear,
they disappear. But I'm going to add something else into the mix here. In what I call Indian country, the old people talk about where do the birds go at night. And some of the old stories are that the birds, all birds, go into another world. And, you know, I had to really stop and think about that. I mean, it didn't make any sense in one level of thinking. But I started looking for birds at night, and I can't find them.
Well, they're asleep.
Where are they?
They must be in the trees.
I've gone out walking at night, and I look around, and I say, okay, birds, where are you? What trees are you in? And looking around, and I don't know. I need to spend more time outside at night or something, but I cannot find birds at night. I'd like to know where they go. I mean, it's got to be some science on it someplace, but, I mean, somebody's had to have taken their blacklight cameras or something and their night vision out to find birds. But, you know, when you think about the thousands and thousands of birds in an area on any given day, where do those thousands of birds go?
In the thousands of trees.
But that's some of the folklore, and again, some of the old stories and the belief systems, is that the birds, you know, go to another dimension. And because the belief of other dimensions is just so readily received, you know, it's just so accepted.
Well, it's part of their spiritual beliefs.
Sure. But it's also, I think, part of a lot of people's beliefs, even though they don't realize it, you know, because you're teaching your kids that, so you must believe something, even though you don't want everybody to talk about it when you get past the age of 9. You know, it's interesting. I've seen interesting pictures over the years, and I know you can attest to this too, Doug, whether it's a little form or colors or things in photographs that may not be a spirit at all, but it could be something in an other world, you know, in an in-between place where there's other little forms taking shape. So I have to think that we need to question more about what worlds within worlds. It interests me. In all of my years of raising children and my my oldest is in her 30s already, and I've always had cause to find things disappearing. You know, when things disappear in your house, mm-hmm. or things reappear, and we started coining the term the little people. And in Indian country, it's believed that little people only come to good people. Little people only come to the people they really like. But they're the tricksters of the spirit worlds. And they need things to play with, things to keep them busy, and you have to kind of keep them in their place. But what the kids also did to me is, when they were young, is I woke up one morning, and I thought, of course, all their felt pens and all their stuff is all put away. They don't know where they are, because you know how that happens, is writing on walls.
Mm-hmm.
So I wake up one morning, and there's writing on the microwave in mm-hmm. this felt pen. And I'm thinking, oh, it's one of the little people trying to communicate with us. Well, it was a big deal. I mean, it was I told that story for years until about 10 years later,
mm-hmm.
you know, my oldest fessed up and said,
mm-hmm. the ghost
did
that.
It.
Yeah. That's funny.
So, you know, it's how, you know, to kind of play with it. However, there were many times where I kind of get choked and say, look, you guys, you got to bring back my... You know, where's my slippers? You know, where's my house coat? Where's my stuff?
That million-dollar stash.
Yeah, where's the winning lottery ticket, of course. But, it, you know, I turn around and suddenly these things would start appearing. And, yes, I suppose we can have logical explanations, but as soon as I would put a little area, wherever I've lived in all these years, I just put a little area, a little play area, and I tell all the little people, this is where you can play. Put out a few little cups and saucers. Here's your little books, your little toys. Now, don't be, you know, causing any trouble in the house. And usually it's pretty quiet. It's a feeling that I get, and it's just that frequency, I suppose, is the only way to explain it. The frequency of little people's energies versus spirit, human spirit energies. Just, I think, like there'd be a difference between a grounded spirit energy versus the residual energy. And I think that it's just the tuning in to feel, and that's the only way I can think of it, is at the frequency or a vibrational level, and it just kind of changes. So,
well, who can know, you know, everything that is, and that's kind of the point of this discussion, is to speculate a little bit, and...
Well, I love speculating.
And... You know, what could be out there? You know, what could actually exist? I mean, even physicists are saying that the other dimensions, and I'm talking about parallel worlds, if you're, you know, the ones that believe in the many worlds theory, that they're right here. They're separated from us by, you know, less than the width of an atom or something. You know, they're here. And I have often wondered about the whole dimension thing, because there are reports. Why do so many people, and I'm talking about credible witnesses here, why are they seeing Bigfoot and yet we can't find one for the life of us? You know, what's up with that? And there seems to be some credible stories of other cryptids and possibly even some of Loch Ness, you know, but we all know that Loch Ness cannot support a creature of that size. There's just not enough food in it, you know, and so where do they come from? You know, where do they go? What's up with this? And there have been other stories too, you know, Mothman and other cryptids that you wonder, you know, and you just have to wonder what else is there.
Well, that's why I like to open the discussion, because I think that people are having experiences, but maybe to get a new idea of possibilities of where to take your thoughts. Because I'm with you, I believe in the worlds within worlds within worlds, and I do in that quantum kind of element of, you know, somebody just used it. Rebecca just used that word in the chat room, the veil. Like, it really is as thin as a veil in between the worlds. And I think that anything is possible. I mean, it's just like go to, you know, the gate 9.5 and you can just walk right in and go into some other reality. And there is more talk about this. If you think about movies and television, even in the last 10 years, mm-hmm. from The Matrix, and now, of course, we have a weekly television show, The Fringe, and more people are opening their minds to the possibilities of other dimensions. And so it's not limited, I think, to just, you know, little people and fairies and like the Harry Potter world. It is extending into other ideas that maybe this isn't all there is. So we have to be kind of multidimensional.
There's nothing to suggest that other life forms in other dimensions exist. For example, we have what we commonly refer to as the spirit realm, right? The spirit plane, beyond the veil. You know, there's that realm. You know, are there interdimensional beings that are privy to that realm? But they, you know, I don't know. You know, we hear examples of, you know, inhuman spirits. They've never been human. They're interdimensional beings of some sort. You know, we hear about lower astral beings, you know, higher level beings, and there's all kinds of stories and speculations, and we've heard a lot of these for a long time. I mean, angels, demons, you know, don't get me started. And, you know, we hear guides, we hear higher, you know, ascended beings. Religion's full of these different types of beings, and, you know, there's no reason to believe they don't exist. We just, you know, we have precious little evidence that they do, but it seems to be compelling, the little that we have, at least for some of them.
Well, to take it a step further, and not just about how little people can make things disappear and appear, I live in a place that stuff does appear in the yard, and talk about vortexes, for instance, or splits in these in between the veils, or where they can occur. And a friend of mine, I have this small field out in the back, and a friend was visiting for a few days, and we'd walk that little field, several times. And geez, go out there in the afternoon, I look down, and there's a perfectly red, unblemished Macintosh apple. And I reached down, picked it up, I looked at her, I said, "This wasn't here earlier." She goes, "No." And I said, "Well, I'm just going to put it back, because I don't know where that apple came from. There's no traffic, there's no people, there's no nothing there. I mean, it's just, okay, I just put that back." And we went out later, and it was gone. Now, the thing about it being gone is that it could have been taken by a bird. You know, any number of events could have taken place to remove the apple. So where it went to, I don't know. Equally, Doug knows this story, everyone, but my neighbor across the road recently had an experience. He's an elderly fellow, but I was sitting here at my computer, and I heard this huge bang. I mean, it lifted me out of my chair, and I looked around, and I thought, whoa, it could have felt like lightning. But I tried to call his house a couple
Thunder.
Of times. Yeah, but, you know, it's almost like a boom crack. I don't know. Yeah, you know, it was just something I'd never heard before, but I've never been that close to thunder and lightning to know what that would sound like close, so I can't compare it to anything. And anyway, there was no answer on his phone, so I went over there, and he was clearly shaken. I walked into his porch, and one of the plug-ins on the wall was completely blown out of the wall, shattered into 1,000 little pieces, like fragments of glass, and black on the wall. As it turned out, there was no apparent strike of lightning, but two of his breakers had gone, and a son-in-law who's an electrician came. He had a heck of a time tracing down where all the wiring and shorts for the electricity were, but the key was, which we ascertained later, something happened right over his garage. The glass bulbs were shattered, the garage doors were blown open, and there was a whole bunch of items, metal items and plastic items, sitting right there in the doorway of the garage that he has never seen before, such as there was an oil can, a canister that would go in an old tractor, but he had never seen that before. He doesn't have a tractor that would fit. And so a whole number of things appeared, and I said, "Oh, well, you know, Keith, that could be another dimension or something." And he just shook his head, because this is also a guy who talks about having seen UFOs his whole life, and his dad used to talk about them too. So he said, there's a lot of things I think we're not supposed to know about. But you see, it's where, you know, okay, we could take the logical approach to say maybe it was a crash of thunder that was that close, but there's no other, other than in the wiring, there's no hit of lightning outside. There was nothing burned. He's got an old conduit, you know, his, for all the power cases, and nothing was affected that way.
Yeah,
so
that's odd.
Maybe it was a split.
Yeah, it could have been a. It could have been. It could have been a freak lightning event, electrical event. Who knows? You know, it could have been the Terminator, you know, appearing from the future. I'm just
but
kidding.
But I like it. Hey, it could be. I like it that we speculate. I like it that our minds are open to other possibilities. And so, geez, you know, when I, back to what you were talking about earlier in the hour about futility, there's just too darn many things to be curious about. There's just too many things to wonder about. You know, my curiosity keeps me going, I tell you, that's for sure. Because we got to think about these things.
So Rebecca has a question.
Yes.
How do you get the little people to return the items?
Tell them to. You know, just say, listen, that's enough now. Bring them back. That's enough. I want my stuff back. You have no right to take these things. No, just bring them all back. And they ought to bring them back. Now, you could bribe them. One of the things that's very common in my culture, by the way, it's is the spirits. And part of whatever meal that you have, you know, you could put out a little plate and feed them. And maybe they like cookies. I don't know, milk and cookies, like for Santa Claus. But, well, if you did that, Rebecca, I don't know. Just you have to get really kind of firm with them and say, that's it. Bring them back. And keep me posted on that, because I'd like to know if you get your stuff back.
Yeah, really.
It's always, you know, it's just interesting things. And if we're observant, there's so much in life. There's so many things occurring, you know, simultaneously, that life's just too darn curious to not want to just keep going. You know, you just put your mind on another thing, set a new goal, and say, these are the things I want to learn about. These are the things I want to do. And it's never a dull moment around here, I tell you. Disney's got nothing on.
Yeah.
Well, again, it's been a great show, and I appreciate very much, you know, the opportunity to share with people in the chat room and all of our members and our guests. And I think what I would like to do next week is talk. I'm going to come to you with a few other little spirit stories that, to me, are like at the top of my list in my life that helped change my life. So. We're going to do a part two of Ghost, but not multidimensional, more the human kind. So,
well, sounds interesting. Well,
that's going to be our next week's topic.
And so, yeah, and check the check mchschurch.org for, you know, in a day or so for the topics that we'll talk about next week.
Well, once again, thank you very much, everybody, for joining on your Sunday evenings and taking time out of your life to be a part of MCHS Church.
Yes, and please spread the word, you know, tell people about it. Tell people on Facebook about not only the church, the program, the school, Metaphysics Institute. If you'd like to learn more about metaphysics and you're not a student already, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. We'd love to have you as a student.
And once again, have a great week, everyone. White lights to everybody. Send white lights even to the folks you don't like, because they need it too. That's what I say.
And thanks too to John Hightower for helping us behind the scenes.
And Camille. We know Camille's not feeling very well tonight. She did a great job. You always have interesting stuff for us, Camille. We look forward to having you again on next week on Living Free. So thanks very much, everybody. Good night.